Ambassador.
Started. My first announcement has to be that we know those are false fire alarms because they're working on the system. They didn't know we had this event tonight. And Dante will fill you in the details, something about a new fire hydrant, but that's why we're not panicking when we hear the alarm, because we know that they're working on it. Welcome, all of you, to the first Highlands Council Landowners Forum. My name is Debbie Pascarelli. I'm one of the Highlands Council members. I know a lot of you. And you know me and know my background, and many of you have been to Highlands Council meetings, but some of you haven't, so I'm going to give the full introduction for the council. The Highlands Act created the Highlands Council, which, to try and use layman's terms, is essentially a super planning board for the Highlands region. There are 15 members specified by the law. We currently have 13 members in place. I am the Warren County representative. I live in Greenwich Township, Warren County. And I'm looking to any of the other council members here yet. I was going to introduce them at this time. No, just honorary council member. The purpose of the event tonight is to assist landowners with considering and reviewing options and opportunities for preserving their land from development. Again, I see people out there. I know you've already been in the farmland or the open space preservation process. Hopefully you'll hear something tonight that'll be useful to you, but we primarily geared this to landowners who may not be aware of what the options and opportunities are. This is an educational session, and this is who it's designed for landowners. The Highlands Council does not have funds to use for conservation or preservation, so our role tonight is to act as a facilitator to bring together the landowners with the groups and the organizations that fund open space and farmland preservation. So I first want to specifically welcome and thank the landowners that are here. Thank you for your interest in this and accepting our invitation. I also want to thank the funding organizations and other groups that are active in farmland preservation efforts. We have representatives here from the state of New Jersey, and everybody's going to be introduced later. I'm just going to give you a general overview. We have Department of Agriculture Farmland Preservation Program representatives, and also DEP's Green Acres Open Space Preservation Program representatives. We have employees from Warren, Passaic, and Morris County. I think those are the three counties represented, and maybe some other county representatives who are here to talk about the county open space programs and county agricultural development board activities. We're going to hear tonight, or you're going to have an opportunity to meet some representatives from the quasi-state organizations that are water providers, who also preserve or purchase land within the watersheds of the areas that they provide water. And last but not least, we have a number of representatives from nonprofit organizations, including land trusts and environmentalist conservation groups, who work with landowners to help them preserve their land and also to provide some funding. Everybody who's participating tonight will be introduced in a few minutes, but I wanted to take the opportunity on behalf of the Highlands Council to thank all of you who came to take the time out this evening, representing the state, county, and other groups, to help us with this program this evening. We appreciate you taking the time. The agenda, I assume you've all picked up, there's a packet in the back. Somewhere in that packet there's an agenda for what we'll be doing this evening. There's a formal and an informal part of the program. The formal part will be presentations that are intended to provide, didactic part of the session, to provide information, an overview of various programs, and it's going to, actually first we're going to have a staff member talk about the land preservation process in general, as a primer, as a backgrounder. Then we'll hear from State Farmland Preservation Program, from State Green Acres Program. We're also going to hear a presentation by a tax attorney and financial consultant. Since there are tax implications and financial considerations for families considering land preservation, we thought it'd be useful for you to get some information just as a beginning. You're certainly not going to hear everything you need to know tonight, but it'll be an introduction to some of those issues. Finally, we'll have a presentation by one of our staff members on the transfer of development rights program that's under development, that is another tool in the land conservation, preservation, and funding process. And last, we will have an informal open house with the attendees from the land trusts and other groups, give you an opportunity one-on-one to talk to these representatives, gather information, make contacts, and hopefully walk away with something more than you came in tonight, knowledge-wise. We're very pleased with the response that we had to the invitations to this program. As you can see, the room is full. We had to stop at 100 with three RSVPs because of the fire marshal's limitations on how many people we can fit in the room and also comfortably how many people we could fit. This turnout indicates that there is a lot of interest in this subject. If we feel there's further interest in having additional sessions, we're going to certainly consider doing those in the future. We will want your feedback on this program either tonight or at a later time, to see what worked, what's valuable, what isn't, whether or not we should do more of these. Our primary goal is for the landowners to learn what next steps would be in deciding whether or not land preservation is right for you and your family, and we certainly hope that we succeed in giving you that information tonight. I want to thank also the Highlands Council staff that will be introduced to you individually later on. They worked very hard to pull this program together and to invite as many people as they had already in the files and in contact with. Thank you all specifically for your jobs. You did that. You'll be introduced, and I'm going to turn this over now. You know, the Highlands Council, we're the board of directors, we're the policymakers, but we have people here who do the real work of the Highlands Council. And the person I'm going to introduce now is Dante DePiro, who is the executive director, which is the same as our chief of staff for the workers. And he's going to introduce staff and make some other comments. And I hope you all find this evening productive. Thank you for coming.
Well, good evening and welcome, everyone. It's a tremendous turnout. It's wonderful to have so many people here today, people who have land in the Highlands, people who are interested in preserving it, and around the table, a great deal of experts who are here to talk to you about how that happens, answer your questions, and put the two of you together, because that's what we really want to do tonight. Land and land preservation are very important to the Highlands Council, and so it was important for us, under the stewardship of our chairwoman of the Land Conservation Committee and our chairman, John Weingart, and the rest of the members, to have an event which puts you in touch with the very folks who are doing the preservation. As Debbie described, that happens through a number of established programs, but we on the council want to make sure that we are facilitating this effort that we have funds to do preservation, that we know what the processes are, and that if you're having problems with the process, that we're able to reach out to the leaders who are here from the agencies to help that happen. So we treat it as a very exciting thing, and we're greatly appreciative that everyone's turned out tonight. If you look around the room, you will see some of the things that the Highlands Council is doing for the plan, and you're going to be hearing a lot more from the council on that as we have our meetings going forward. But again, tonight is really not about the plan. It's about land preservation and getting to how it happens, what you need to know, and how we can help you in filing your applications and getting timely review and ultimately satisfaction in the process. We've got some of our outstanding staff members here today. I'd like to start with Laura Swack, immediately to my right, to your left. And she is our land preservation coordinator and has been the principal in setting up today's event. She'll be speaking with you later and has a lot of wonderful contacts with the folks who are here today. Jeff Lajava on the end is one of our staff attorneys. He is our lead on the Transfer of Development Rights Program. You all know how important TDR is to making sure that we have an additional means to preserve land in the Highlands, an additional way to get dollars to the folks who have land. And it also works, as you've heard, and we're going to make it work, to send density to places that are appropriate. So Jeff's going to be speaking later about how TDR can fit into this effort. Other staff members who are here, maybe not in the room because we're trying to let folks, as many of the public, come in as possible. Aaron Thompson, who you know, who's been the clerk at the Highlands Council, has done a great job with our setup today. Jeff Knapp, also a terrific job making sure we have everything that we need. Mary Jude Haddock-Weiler, I saw before. She's one of our regional planners. She's also been instrumental in setting up today's event with other folks. Debbie?
I see Kim.
Kim Ball-Kaiser, another staff. She's at the back, helping in the back of the room. Staff attorney, also someone who's putting a premium on making sure that we're delivering a program today that's going to be responsive to land preservation. If I haven't missed anyone, let me give you a couple of the procedures for how we're going to handle tonight's event. The first and one of the most important things is, because we know the interest in this event today, we are taping this presentation, and we're going to put it on the web. So if you know anyone who is unable to attend today, let them know. Like all the things that the council's doing, when we have a council meeting, we're putting our minutes up on the web so the folks can follow along. We now have the ability to do our audio of the meetings. We're putting those on the web, all to make sure that you can follow what we're doing, we can get your input, and we can make that part of our process, because we know with that involvement, the product itself becomes better and better. So the presentation itself, well, it's about an hour. We've limited the formal presentation just to the speakers, 1 hour. The purpose is so we can get to a number of booths around the building. The booths is where you'll have the chance one-on-one to talk to the various groups about exactly what you need to know. And Laura's going to describe in more detail who those groups are, but we've got an amazing array of talented folks who've been in the business of preserving land for a long time, both in the state and in nonprofit groups that are here to help you today. We wanted to maximize that involvement, but we did want to give you an overview from some of the program heads themselves so you'll see how it works. So we're going to get to that. You'll have an opportunity to ask your questions in that open session when you go and talk one-on-one with the folks that we have available. You'll see down the hallway here, there'll be signs on the wall which will identify the names of the groups so you can know where to go. There's a conference room that will also have space for you. You all should have gotten a folder, the blue folder that the woman in front has in her hand. Make sure you have a folder. Thank you. There's our prop. Laura has made sure to assemble those so that you have a packet of material that we think will be the most helpful to you. Collect information and put your notes right into there. It can be something which put everything together so when you, like our friend Hank, comes to the meetings and wants to ask a question, you'll have it right there. A couple other things. Again, let me reiterate, the goal tonight is to put you in touch with the folks who can tell you what the next steps are and answer your questions. The next council meeting is Thursday, so tomorrow at 4 o'clock for anyone who wants to talk about the plan or has general questions. We invite you to be there. And overall, please give us your feedback. So far, folks have been very good about telling us what they think and providing suggestions. Constructive comments really are something that makes our product better, as I said, so we look forward to that. So don't want too much talking, so let me give it over to Laura to introduce you to exactly who you have here today. Thank you for coming, and look for the staff around the room if you have questions. We have a number of folks in the back. In addition to the ones I mentioned, Ross McDonald's here, and who's head of our economic development, and maybe others. So if you need help, raise your hand or come see us. That's what we're here for.
Thank you, Dante. There is a seat up here in front. If you have a seat next to you, raise your hand. That's an empty seat, so please, you know, fill in. We've got them. You might as well use them. My name is Laura Schwab. I'm the land preservation coordinator for the Highlands Council. Any other empty seats, raise your hand. There's one over here. Two, a lot of them over here in this side. There's still one over here. Keep your hand, if you don't mind, please keep your hands raised so the folks can find an empty seat and be comfortable. There's one over here. Thank you. Thanks very much for your help. As land preservation coordinator, an event like this is helpful because a lot of people, when you go to town hall and you want to develop your property, there's a lot of experts to help you. They direct you to the town engineer, or the town planner, or the board of adjustment. But if you go into town hall and ask, you know, how to preserve your property, oftentimes there's not a person or a department to help you. And that's changing because 59 out of the 88 municipalities have dedicated funds to preserve farmland and open space. So that could be changing. But there are a number of programs, and the idea is to match, if you're interested in preserving your land, and matching up those programs with your needs and your family's needs. You have a number of options, and you're here with the experts that will help you. I wanted to mention the value of nonprofit land trusts. They are nonprofit organizations, but they can also work with you side by side, talk with you about you know, what you and your family would like to do with your land, whether it's now or into the future. And they're very well versed in a lot of the programs, and they work very closely with the state. So tonight's event is an opportunity to talk with a number of experts. As Dante said, we've got lots of booths here around the hall. I'm going to introduce the folks that are here. But what the Highlands Council does is when a landowner calls the Highlands Council, he or she will talk to either Ross McDonald. Ross, raise your hand. There he is, way in the back. If you want to develop your property. And oftentimes he'll send them to me if people want to preserve their property. So I've talked to many of you, and I'm really glad to put a name to a face from the phone. So we've spoken to about 400 people, and about a quarter of that, those people are interested in preservation options. But when we talk about the options, we usually send people to Green Acres or the State Agriculture and Development Committee. So we're very fortunate to have them here to explain their program. But we also have representatives of other groups. All seven counties in the Highlands have a dedicated trust fund for purchasing open space and farmland. We have Mr. Bob Resker here. Bob, are you in the room? From Warren County. We have, is Kathleen Karen here from Passaic? There she is in the back from Passaic County. I saw Frank Pinto here. Is there anybody else here from Morris? He's from Morris County?
Kelly.
Kelly, okay. So they'll all be at tables back there. Kathleen, did you have someone else from Passaic?
No.
Okay. And any other counties here that we weren't aware of? Okay, just wanted to mention those, and they represent the County Agriculture Development Board as well as Open Space Trust Funds for all of those. Okay, for the nonprofit groups, we have the Association of New Jersey Environmental Commissions. This is an educational organization. I'm sure they want to tell you about the workshop they're holding on the transfer of development rights. Joy Farber, raise your hand. That's Joy. Again, she'll be at a table back there to talk more. Hunter and Land Trust Alliance. Margaret, are you here? There she is in the back. Hunter and Land Trust Alliance. They do a lot of open space and farmland preservation in Hunter and County. She's in the back, but she's also going to be at a table later. Morris Land Conservancy, Mr. Earl Riley. Morris Land Conservancy works in northern New Jersey, including the Highlands. They do a lot of work on open space plans and working with municipalities. Earl is the land acquisition director at Morris Land Conservancy. The Nature Conservancy is here. In the back there, Mr. John Keenan is the director of protection. And they just hired a new Skylands land acquisition person. Skylands also includes the Highlands. His name is Eric Olson. The Nature Conservancy preserves land throughout the world, and they focus on preserving wildlife and plant habitat. New Jersey Conservation Foundation, did they send a representative? I knew that they had a couple of issues, but they preserve land all over the state. Passaic River Coalition, okay, we have Matt Polsky, who is the director of the Passaic River Coalition's Land Trust, and
Eugene Reynolds,
okay. And so Passaic River Coalition preserve land at least along the Passaic River watershed, if not more. So talk to them. Trust for Public Lands, we have Rich Haymeyer. Rich, raise your hand, and Tom Gravel. Trust for Public Lands is a nationwide organization. They do a lot of work in the Highlands. And they have dedicated staff. Rich is a dedicated staff for preserving Highlands. So we try to get the staff person that you, if you decide to preserve your land, would be working with. And last but not least, the New Jersey Water Supply Authority. Did Paula, there she is, okay. Paula Dees back there, the New Jersey Water Supply Authority works to buy watershed lands in the Raritan Basin, as well as any of the lands that supply their reservoir. So I want to thank all the groups for coming. It'll be a great event when you can go and mingle around and get some air. And thank you to all of the people here that are coming. So I'm going to give it back to Dante to introduce our first speaker.
Thank you very much. Our first speaker is Susan Kraft. Susan is the executive director of the SADC, the State Agricultural Development Committee. In that capacity, she has a number of important roles. One of them is to head up the Farmland Preservation Program. And in addition, has a role in charge of the State Transfer of Development Rights Bank, which is a bank that we may be working with in terms of structuring our TDR program. And I see that she's brought Tim Brill, who's an outstanding staff member who's been active along with Susan on the Highlands Initiative for some time. So Susan, thank you for coming.
Well, let's start over here.
Anyway.
I feel like a talk show host. It's very nice to be here tonight. We try to keep this to 15 minutes to keep you on schedule. With me tonight, in addition to Tim Brill, in our office, Tim is the planning manager. So it's his job to make sure that what the SADC does is done with an understanding of what else is going on the ground. So that includes Highlands, Pinelands, Office of State, Office of Smart Growth, you know, the state plan. So to try to make sure that one hand of government is knowing what the other is doing, which doesn't always happen. Gary Pohorley, we recently hired Gary from Hunterdon County's Farmland Preservation Program. He has a great knowledge of the Highlands, and he's the guy that sits at the kitchen tables with landowners to help you walk you through the basics of the program for the state's Farmland Preservation Acquisition Program. And then Heidi Winzinger. Heidi's our chief of acquisition, so all the acquisition programs flow through her. So if you have a complaint, call her and not me. No, I'm just kidding. No complaints. It's very nice to be here tonight, and can I just see a show of hands, folks who are relatively familiar with the details of the Farmland Preservation Program? Familiarity? All right, good, about half of the audience. How many folks in the audience are owners of farmland? Okay, good. Well, I came to the right place tonight then. Okay. All right, what we wanted to do tonight is just familiarize you with some of the basics of the program. There are four different avenues you could pursue to preserve your farm through the Farmland Preservation Program, and we want to just give you a little bit of highlights on each of those and give you some contact information. And at the very end, we have our web address and Heidi's email address. So if there are any questions you have after you leave tonight, that have not been answered, you can still contact us. Okay, so what is the Farmland Preservation Program? Farmland Preservation is a voluntary land conservation program. This Farmland Preservation Program has no powers of condemnation, so it's a completely voluntary program based on willing landowners' participation. When we preserve a farm, a document called the deed of easement gets recorded against the farm's title, basically against the deed, and then runs with the land. So once we pay a farmer, or a farmland owner, I should say, to preserve their farm, it's a perpetual easement, which means you can't get out of it once you're in it. Once you've been paid to preserve this farm, it's in perpetuity. And so that restriction runs with the land. Basically, what the state is purchasing from you is all of the non-agricultural development rights, right? Everybody learned that property ownership is a bundle of rights. You have the, well, maybe I shouldn't get into that tonight. Rights to develop, rights to farm, rights to water, rights to, you know, access, enjoyment, recreation, all of these are rights. And what we're doing is purchasing away from the landowner all of the rights that are anything other than agriculture. So you're left with a farm that can continue to be used for farming, any kind of farming. You could sell it to a new owner, they can use it for farming, but you just can't do non-agricultural uses. It's a, you know, 8-page document, and there's fine print, but we won't get into all that tonight. In essence, that's the essence of the program. Limited housing opportunities. If you have a very large farm in particular, is it possible to reserve some additional housing opportunities in the future? It is. There are different ways to do that. In general, the SADC has kind of a one house for 100 acres sort of option. How does that correlate with what's going on in the Highlands? I can't tell you that completely tonight. We are working with the Highlands Council and DEP to make sure that when the Farmland Preservation Program goes out to talk to you, we're not telling you something that is going to conflict with what they tell you. So we're in the process of working on that issue. So how much does a landowner get paid for this perpetual right? And we realize that this is usually the biggest financial asset in these people's portfolios. This is potentially the most important financial decision of their lives, and we take this very seriously. And how we get to a number is that we pay the landowner the difference between what the property would have sold for development and what the property's worth as a farm. So let's talk about pre-Highlands for a minute. If you have a farm that had 100 acres and had 5-acre zoning, and let's say you could have sold it for $20,000 an acre to a developer, and if you could only sell it to a farmer now with the deed restriction on it, maybe it's worth $5,000 an acre, the difference between those two numbers, or in this case $15,000 an acre, is the amount of money the landowner gets paid to remove those rights. Okay, because you're still left with the farmland, so it still has that residual value. And that's how it's calculated. Every property that is processed has two different appraisers do that double analysis. Both appraisers look at the before Highlands development value. Both appraisers look at that farm value. And so we get a range. We get two opinions. And the state then certifies a number between those two values. Now, what's very important for you to understand is when the Highlands Act was passed, it instructed the Farmland Preservation Program that when we looked at appraisals, we had to tell the appraisers to assume that the zoning that you had in place and the environmental regulations that were in place before the Highlands Act are what we use to determine the value. Okay? So it's like the appraisers look at it like we were appraising it right before the Highlands Act went into effect. That is the value that we do appraisals on. So it is possible at this point in time to get paid the full development value of your property. And by law, we have to use that higher value when we extend an offer to the landowner. Okay? So that's how that works. Next. Funding history. Kick this to death, but program started in 1983. The state had had four separate bond issuances between 81 and 95 for a total of $200 million to the farmland program. When the Garden State Preservation Trust Act was passed, the voters of New Jersey dedicated $98 million a year in sales tax revenue to fund farmland, green acres, and historic preservation. It's a huge amount of money. The Garden State Preservation Trust bonded against that stream and basically raised $2 billion to purchase land throughout the state and preserve land throughout the state. Okay. That $2 billion had a 10-year expenditure horizon, and we are into year 7 of that, so we're coming to a close, and we're about a little more than 80% through that money. Okay. So it's true, state program funding is starting to diminish as compared to what it was a few years back. Now, does this mean that that's it? Funding's all over? We certainly don't think so. We, Green Acres, the nonprofit community, Farm Bureau, conservationists across the state are coming together to talk about and prepare to go back to the public to ask for renewal or to ask for additional funding, okay? And this has happened since the early 60s. New Jersey has always had farmland and, well, since 60s, Green Acres, and then in the 80s, farmland. But we've always had funding to preserve farmland. So you should keep your ears to the ground and read the newspapers. You'll be hearing as the months go on, particularly, I think, as we move into next year, a buildup of momentum to have additional funding. So we do anticipate funding beyond the next couple of years. You know, what form it takes, I don't know yet. But we would be very surprised if New Jersey voters decided, nah, we've had enough, you know, land preservation. That's just not the sentiment anywhere you go. So we're very optimistic. So what does the Farmland Preservation Program get? Before the Garden State Preservation Trust, we got $20 million a year, roughly, to spend throughout the state. When the Garden State Preservation Trust hit in 1999, that quadrupled. So the farmland program has had, on average, about $87 million a year to spend, and that's still what we're doing. So there's an enormous amount of work going on throughout the state to preserve thousands and thousands of acres, some of which, of course, are in the highlands. And like I said, I see us having funding to get through this year and through 07, and so then we're starting to become reliant on whatever the next funding source might be. Now, aside from that, because when the Garden State Preservation Trust bonded for these funds, it had an opportunity to get a better interest rate than it did. If I could ask everyone, if you have a cell phone, would you turn them off? Use this opportunity to turn them off if they're still on, just for all the speakers. We had the opportunity to get an additional $30 million in funds flowing into the Farmland Preservation Program. This happened right at the time that the Highlands Act was hitting, and we understood that landowners were very upset and concerned about the impact of the Highlands Act. So what the Secretary of Agriculture, Charlie Kaparis, asked to do and did do is take that $30 million of additional funding, and rather than spread it across the whole state, to dedicate it solely for use in the Highlands. And so that's what's been done. Sir, I think...
Question. Do you think they passed this Highlands Act so that everyone is more pushed into this funding for preservation?
I couldn't possibly answer that question. You know, my job is...
like there's not much of an alternative anymore.
Yeah, excuse me, sir. If everyone would hold off a little bit in respect to the speakers, if we could let them finish, we will have a chance for questions at the end.
So we have this $30 million. 15 of it is currently available in liquid cash that's dedicated solely to the Highlands. And another $15 million I'm anticipating will be made available early this year. So there's really a separate sort of $30 million funding pot in the Farmland Preservation Program to try to respond to the fact that we understand that landowners have been impacted. There are four ways you can access the Farmland Preservation Program. And for those of you trying to take copious notes, I'm sure copies of this presentation will be available on the web as well, so you could download it. First is the County Easement Purchase Program. So out of the 21 counties in New Jersey, 18 of them have county farmland preservation programs, and I think every county in the Highlands does. So that's one place, and we'll get back to, but remember when you leave tonight, if you're interested in farmland preservation, the county is the first office you should call. They have the best understanding of how your farm fits in with what the state might be trying to accomplish, our office, with what the county's trying to accomplish, with what municipalities may be trying to accomplish. So they're a really great resource to access early to try to understand which of these avenues might be the most appropriate for your farm. State acquisition is the second, and that's when the state and the SADC staff deals directly with landowners. We're not going through the county. We're not going through a nonprofit or municipality. It's us directly with landowners. The third is the Municipal Planning Incentive Grant, or what we call PIG program. Municipalities have gotten into the farmland preservation game. And there, I think, are 20 municipalities in the Highlands region with planning incentive grant programs. So that can be an opportunity. And then finally, the nonprofit program. You have a great representation from the nonprofit community here tonight. They are another avenue for potentially going to the program. So I know that's a lot, but again, just start at one point, and I think that's the county, and we will work with the county to try to get your application in the right program. I won't belabor this. The SADC has proposed substantial changes to just the procedures, how we process things at the state to speed it up. Biggest complaint we hear about the program is it's too slow. We're trying to rectify that by really getting rid of all the overlap between the county and the state's processing of applications. Go ahead. Okay, so if you apply to the county easement purchase program, essentially what happens is the counties are going to be, if they haven't already, adopt strategic farmland preservation plans. They're looking at their whole county. They're assessing the soil quality, and they're writing a plan that says, you know, this is what we'd like to do. We'd like to preserve 50,000, 100,000, whatever number of acres, and this is roughly where they are. They determine their selection criteria, their ranking criteria, based on the agriculture in that county. As you know, agriculture in Sussex is very different than agriculture in Salem counties. And so this allows the county to really design its program to respond to what's there. And so the SADC would then approve their plan and then just sort of block grant money to them. And then the county could spend that money on any farm in its plan. Okay? So again, we're kind of deferring the prioritization process to the county, and we're really just becoming a funding partner. One of the benefits of this, for those that you are familiar with the program, is this would kind of eliminate the statewide bid down process that we go through right now, where landowners take less than fair market value to compete for funding. We're really looking to eliminate that. We figure farmers usually think that their property is worth more than we're offering anyway, and to ask them to take less is usually insult to injury. Go ahead. So we're going to block grant this money. $2 million is anticipated as a minimum allocation. Each county could qualify up to $8 million in a given year based on competition and their ability to spend and close farms quickly, which is also very important. And then each year's funding allocation moving forward would be dependent on their ability to spend what they've been given already. Okay. State acquisition program. This is when you would deal with my staff directly. The state can either purchase easements from landowners, or it could purchase properties in fee simple. So sometimes we have landowners that are just ready to get out, move out of the state. They don't want to be here anymore. So this program, and some counties also do fee simple, but the state in particular is set up to do a fee simple acquisition of land. We strategically target and solicit applications. That's part of what this is about tonight, is trying to have outreach and communicate with you all. We've adopted criteria that are, again, sensitive to this, to each county that we're in. And basically, the state's looking for the highest quality farms that we can process in every county, as we should. We're going to work with the counties and get their input as to what they think should be high priorities for the state, so that informs our thinking. We will, if a landowner applies to the state program, what happens is we enter into a 120-day agreement where the landowner agrees not to sell the property. We get our appraisals done, and then we make you an offer within that 120 days. That's based on the appraisals. And we will be soliciting applications regionally and processing applications year-round. This is really the beginning of our outreach. You would expect, you will see our staff attending County Ag Development Board meetings in every county to kind of go out and, you know, hit the pavement and beat the bushes and find out who's interested in applying and solicit those applications and get rolling on a new round of SADC applications. The third program is the municipal program. Like I said, 20 municipalities have gotten into the farmland preservation game. In order to do so, municipalities have to first have established an agricultural advisory committee. They have to have created a dedicated funding source, and they have to have adopted a farmland preservation plan element of their master plan. That means that that township is very serious about conserving farmland if they're building it right into their master plan. So then they would submit that planning incentive grant application to us, and once we approve it, again, we sort of block grant money to the township. They could use that on any farm in their list. Under our current rules, there's a maximum $1.5 million a year allocation to each municipality. So the PIG program can be very strategic, but it's not as well funded as the county and state programs. But it's an important piece of the puzzle. Here, the township is the driving force. The township is the one that would be your contact. They would conduct the appraisals. They would do the survey. All the administrative logistics happen at the local level as opposed to the county or state. And then finally, the nonprofit program. The nonprofits that you heard about tonight and others in the state, they apply to us for cost share funding. And if we approve their project, sometimes they apply just a particular property. Other times they'll apply with sort of a broad area to spend money in. Either way, once we allocate funding to them, that can be up to 50% of the cost of the easement, and the nonprofit has to find funding partners for the other 50%. Go ahead. One thing before I go into this slide, whenever a farm is preserved, it usually is a financial partnership between the state, the county, and increasingly the municipality. So despite which program you might be coming through, most applications get funded through a financial partnership between all three levels of government. And as land values across the state, you know, increase, that becomes more and more important. And I know that many folks in the audience feel that their land values have gone down. You know, that may be true, but that will even move over time. And so, you know, it's more and more important that townships and counties that are serious about farmland preservation provide funding to help make that happen. Just to give you a sense of what's been done so far, there's 254 farms in the Highlands that have been preserved, 101 of those in the preservation area, and 153 in the planning area. 23,700 acres have been preserved so far. You can see twice as much in the planning area as in the preservation area. And over $183 million have been spent in the Highlands to date. $118 million of which was state funds, and the rest of it came from our local partners. So you see how important those county and municipalities are in contributing to the funding. In the pipeline, we have 136 farms from the Highlands that are in the process in all of these programs. 61% in the preservation area, 75% in the planning area. So we're seeing a more evening out of the participation there, and those account for over 10,000 acres. So that's just what's in the pipeline currently. How to move forward, because I have to stop talking. Again, contact your County Ag Development Board administrator first. They are your best, most immediate source of information and will put you in contact with the right people. And if you're interested in state acquisition, we would encourage you to submit an application now, whether it's for a direct easement purchase application or fee simple. We have 25 full application packets here tonight for those of you who are interested, and it's got lots of information in it. Go ahead. And the one thing you may want to write down is our web address and Heidi's email address. One thing I will say that I didn't put in the presentation is the State Ag Development Committee is a committee of made up of four farmers, two public members and the rest are bureaucrats of one kind or another. It's chaired by the Secretary of Agriculture, Charlie Kaparis. We are very cognizant of the equity impacts of the Highlands Act, and we are very focused on trying to do whatever we can to soften that blow for as many people as possible. That's why we dedicated that $30 million to the Highlands, and we understand that the folks that have been most impacted are in the preservation area. The SADC at its last meeting, I have copies of this for you to take, adopted a policy where we said we will give priority consideration to farms in the preservation area for that $30 million because we understand that impact. I have 100 copies of that policy with me tonight. You're certainly welcome to take one home. So we're really trying to come here and say we will help, you know, make things as good as we possibly can for you. The Highlands Council has been absolutely great to work with and listening to us and trying to convey concerns of landowners. So thank you for your time, and I'll be quiet.
Thanks.
Great. Thank you very much. Susan and the other speakers have graciously agreed to take questions during the open house, so if you don't mind, we'll take those later because we need to get to other speakers. But I think that was very helpful. As we could see, so many farmers and owners of farmland are here today that we really appreciate that presentation.
In Huntington County, if there hasn't been a farm that's been acquired for farmland preservation since this act was passed by the county, the freeholds have turned down every acquisition, okay, that's in the preservation area. In fact, some were due to close, and they withdrew the money and the funding.
I appreciate that. Yeah, thanks for the offer to address that. I mean, we know lots of you have questions. We need to present the folks. Obviously, an issue we've heard in front of the council is the effort to get farms in Hunterdon, like other counties, dealt with. So we'll take that also during an open house. And I know you have a question. Please, if you guys could just let us get through it that way, because I need to introduce the Green Acre side. Farmland preservation is important, but so is open space preservation. And in that regard, the lead agency is the New Jersey DEP's Green Acre Program. Tonight, Richard Osborne is here. He's the Northwest team leader. And as you may know, Green Acres functions all around the state, but Green Acres has made a specific commitment up here in the Highlands. They have staff who are going to focus specifically on the Highlands region, which we believe is going to be a great assistance to us. He's brought a lot of his staff here today, which I'm sure he'll introduce. And we have a PowerPoint presentation that he'll give.
Good evening.
Here you go, Richard. If you use this, that'll tape record it.
I have to use that?
Yeah, that way we can tape record it and we can put it on the web for everybody. We'll get you enough wire there if you need it. Jeff, can you make sure he's got a lead there?
I got to untangle it first. Thank you and welcome. I'm glad I could come up and talk and give you some information about our program. A lot of what Susan had said, I'm going to do a little bit of duplicate work. They tell me that if you hear things three times, it'll start to be something that you can remember. So a few of the things I'm going to repeat as to what she had said. If you have some questions afterwards and you're talking to some of our staff or their staff, that may then be the third time, and we'll hopefully be able to give you enough information to go back and think about and decide about if this is the direction you want to go in. As Susan did, I'd like to introduce some of our staff first, but I need to tell you that Dante, Laura, and Debbie are not part of the New Jersey Green Acres program. If they want to be, we'll certainly allow you to take care of that. But if I could have my staff stand up, the people that are with me tonight, the number of them here. These folks are the ones that work with us. Renee, Pam, Larry, Jada, Elizabeth, Lisa, and Courtney, who is sitting down, is going to be my operator. If you have some questions and I'm not available to answer them specifically myself, any of those folks will be more than happy to work with you. They work primarily by county, and you can talk to them, and maybe they might be the person you may end up working directly with in your program. So with that said, I'd like to go ahead and start. Courtney, thank you for allowing us to come. Green Acres is part of the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection, the Division of Natural Resources. We are a conservation, recreation, and open space funding program. We have a mission. our mission, and before I read this out, may be different than some of the nonprofit programs that we have here, may be different than some of the county programs. We work with all of them. So what we're trying to do is work in partnership with them. To achieve in partnership with others a system of interconnected open spaces whose protection will preserve and enhance New Jersey's natural environment, its historic, scenic, and recreational resources for public use and enjoyment. I'm not going to go through our entire history. We don't have enough time for that tonight. But suffice to say, Green Acres has been in business over 45 years. We've been doing this for a long time. It was here before the Highlands was started. We've worked to go through a lot of preservation throughout the state. A lot of the wildlife management areas were brought in by us. A lot of the state parks were brought in by us. A lot of local funding that we have worked in our program has gone to local town parks and nonprofit programs as well. So we work in a big picture, and I'll get into that a little bit more in the future. The most important thing you need to know is exactly what Susan said before, and I'll go briefly through this slide. In 1998, a stable source of funding was put together for Green Acres so that we could have enough money to go in and do what our mission has asked us to do. That money, again, was about $200 million per year average to break down, same breakdown that Susan had talked about. I'm going to jump down to the 60% of the funds. Green Acres was allocated more funding than what farmland was, mostly because we do not do as much easement purchase. Most of our purchases are fee purchases, which means that when you're buying the entire property, it costs more money to buy that to preserve it. Part of our share is in the state acquisition program, where we're buying land for state parks and wildlife management areas. Part of it is the local share, which is the counties and municipalities that we work with in cooperation, grants that we're able to get to them. And then our nonprofit share, which is a 10% share of that total amount of money, which we work with on all of our nonprofit programs. I want to go briefly. We have four main areas that we focus on. I'm going to talk about two of them tonight in the effort of saving some time. We have a program that we put together that takes about a day to give an entire presentation. 15, 20 minutes doesn't really give us a lot of opportunity to go through the entire program, which is why I have it. We have extra staff with us tonight so that you can ask specific questions after the presentation is over to be able to get more detailed information for your particular issues, questions, or preservation purposes. The first that I'm going to speak about is our state land acquisition program. And basically, we are the real estate agencies for Division of Parks and Forestry, Natural Lands Management, and Division of Fish and Wildlife. We buy the land for them to manage. They are the managers of our properties that are state-owned under the DEP program. We go out and we work with landowners, and we do that on a number of different ways. But these three programs are the main programs that we work with on our state acquisition side. The bulk of our monies were state acquisition monies, and we'll talk about that. In the past year and a half, in the Highlands only, Green Acres has spent over $41 million on the state acquisition program, which is nearly half of what our statewide appropriation was. So this is what we spent in the past year and a half. This amount of money was used for wildlife management areas, state parks, and natural areas. Our second part of our main program, similar to what, again, Ag was doing, is our local and nonprofit assistance program. In this particular situation, we provide grants and loans to municipalities and counties. We provide matching grants to nonprofit land conservancies. They use this money for land acquisition, outdoor recreation facilities, and development. These are mostly 50% grants to them that are used to purchase areas that are involved in what they want to do with the land preserve, whether it be a park, a conservation area, maybe a historic resource of some sort, and that's what they're using it for. If you take what I had mentioned before, in the past year and a half, Green Acres has spent over $41 million for state acquisition in the Highlands. We have also given to our partners an additional $27 million. If you think that think about the fact that their $27 million is only 50% of what they need, and they have to come up with the other 50% in order to buy the land, which gives you about what they're working on, about $50 million that they're able to spend. This is the amount of money actual spent in the Highlands since the Act has come into place. And our $41 million, the Green Acres program over the last year and a half has helped to fund $95 million in land acquisition in the Highlands area alone. We have many preservation purposes that we work towards, recreation lands. We try to look at the quality environment, our ecosystem protection and management, tourism, conference. Some examples of them would be natural resource protection for wildlife and flora and fauna. We work with the Farmland Preservation Program, and we do some of this ourselves for landscape and protection as well as farmland protection. Watershed protection, a big issue in the Highlands, is something that we work with a lot. It's not only watershed, it's aquifer recharge, it's access to water, it's things to protect the water quality. We work with historic resource protection. We do a lot of additions and inholdings to state parks and wildlife management areas. If there's a piece that's missing, they've gone over the years and they bought a piece and there's one more piece that they're missing or maybe a large piece that's adjacent to it, we'll take the area that the green surrounded, which would be the green area, which might be on an already existing park or wildlife management area, and we look at what we might refer to as a hole in a donut. If that property happens to come up for sale, again, we are a voluntary program. We do not do any type of condemnation. We have to wait until the property owner is ready to sell it before we can go and acquire that property. We'll then look at getting an addition added to that park or that wildlife management area. We work to protect greenways and recreational lands. Greenways to protect a corridor area for animals, to protect watershed areas. It could be alongside of a stream corridor. Recreational lands, trails, a lot of information on trails. We just closed on a large trail segment on a former railroad bed to have a railroad corridor for a trail in the Highlands. Waterfront access, as I mentioned before, can be in a number of different ways, fishing, hiking, boating, alongside for access to the water in and around the area in throughout the state. Now, all these things are things we do throughout the state. It's not just in the Highlands. And we've been doing this for over 45 years throughout the state. Outdoor recreation. This is a big part that plays into our local county and municipal grants. Recreation for people, places for them to play, whether it be basketball, ball fields, skateboard parks, any outdoor type of recreation that might be there. A lot of our programs, the state park program does not primarily supply places for ball fields. We look to the counties and the towns and municipalities to be able to do that for the recreational purposes. And they do that with some of our grant money. We have a lot of techniques that we use when we acquire property. The most one in the state acquisition side and mostly used in our local program is fee simple acquisition, where we buy the property outright, we buy it, we own it. We do conservation easements and development rights purchases similar to what Ag does. We do not encourage our program to do that, but we do occasionally do it. The biggest difference in what we do and what they do is we require in our program, through all of our legislation, public access. That means there must be a trail corridor there. There must be some type of access that the public can have on the property. We work with a lot of nonprofit camps to help preserve those camps. We do conservation easements, which helps to conserve not only the development rights and some of the things that Susan talked about, but also the environmental concerns of the property, the natural resources of the property is what our conservation programs are looking to preserve. We work through donations. We have a number of properties that are donated to us every year, and I think there's going to be some speaking about that later on. One thing that we found, a donation does not have to be a full donation. It could be a partial donation. We found in many cases that the amount of money that people will get by making a donation to either our program or one of the nonprofit programs, their benefit on April 15th of the following year is much greater if they've made a donation than if it had been if they'd taken a full cash payment on the property. So they end up getting more money by making some sort of a donation included as part of their property. We partnership and do co-ops with many different groups. Again, speak with some of the nonprofit programs that are here tonight. They can tell you about that. We work with SADC on a regular basis and have regular meetings with them to try to work things out. There might be a piece of property that is excellent farmland that also happens to have a wooded area that backs up to one of the state parks. We look to work with them on that wooded area. SADC would then work with the farmland program. Grants and loans are, again, part of our nonprofit and our local program. And payment in lieu of taxes is something that we do for the municipalities, that when a property is purchased by the state or by a nonprofit organization, we have a program set up to help the town to pay back some of their taxes through our program so that the effect of taking some of that property off the tax rolls is not as hard on them as what might be if this particular program wasn't in place. Benefits of working with our program, there's no realty transfer tax program. We don't need to get a mortgage approval. There's no rollback taxes as long as you've kept your rollback your farmland application active, your farmland assessment program, that is. There are donation tax incentives. We are allowed to do partial acquisitions. If you have a large piece of property, you want to sell the majority of your property, but you want to keep your house that we are not looking to purchase, we can do an acquisition where we would acquire only the vacant land, and then you would keep the house. You can either live in it, sell it privately, whatever you'd like to do. We do not have any development contingencies. When you go out to have it developed by a developer, part of theirs is I will pay you on a per lot basis if I can get a certain number of lots. We do not have those contingencies. Quickly, I want to go through a real brief part of this. This is our process that we use on a state acquisition side. Some of the counties and nonprofits have a similar program to what they do when they ask you to go through it. Our first contact, we will ask you to fill out an offer application. It's a very simple two-page application. We have a lot of them here tonight. Our staff can help you with that and have you supply them the information that's on here. Contact phone number, and our website is also on this as well. So if you'd like that information, it's also be on the slides, but you won't have to write it down if you take some of our information with you. Our application will give us basic information about your property. One of the things we also particularly ask for you to put on this application is to tell us what your asking price for the property, so that we know that we're at least going to be in the ballpark when we come back and talk to you. It's very important to have that put on here. I'm going to talk a little bit more in detail about appraisals because I know value is very important to people, so I'm going to skip over that now. We look to do title work to make sure that you, in fact, are the owner of your property and it wasn't something that Uncle Joe had sold off 25 years ago and forgot to tell you about as part of the family or something like that. Hazard review. We want to make sure we're buying a piece of property that doesn't have toxic waste or dumps on it. So we're going to do a review of the property to understand what are we actually buying. When we get to the point that we've come to an agreement on value, we're going to do a survey on a property. Surveys are very important. Larger acres we'll buy on a per acre basis because we found that some people whose property has been in a family for a long time, 40, 50, 60 years, never had a survey done, especially on large acreage. We're going to do a survey because many of the tax information is not exact as to the acreage. If we're going to buy you, you want to know what you're selling, we want to know what we're buying. So the survey is going to tell us that. We've had a number of times where people have brought property to us and, oops, there aren't as many acres there. We've also had a number of times where people have brought property to us. We had one situation where the owner ended up having 50 acres more than he thought he had. What a bonus. I mean, it works both ways. So that's why we do the survey, to know what we're buying. And then we get a closing of title. Our closing of title is very simple. We do it in our office, we can do it in your attorney's office, we can do it through the mail. We try to keep it as simple as possible. Question that we always get, Susan addressed it briefly in her program, how long does it take? It generally takes us from 12 to 18 months. Why does it take us so long? One of the reasons is we're the government. You know, I believe in honesty. We have to go out for bid to do the appraisals. We have to go out for bid to do the surveyors. They all take us an additional amount of time as if we could just go out and hire somebody. But because everybody's always looking over our shoulder, we have to do some extra steps that the normal person wouldn't do when they're buying a piece of property. So it takes us a longer period of time to be able to get that done. So I'm not going to tell you it's going to be done in 4 months as you could buy a house, or 3 months as you go out and buy a house with somebody. It's going to take you a longer period of time than that. And that would be from the time we got our application in until we actually close on a property. Occasionally it's quicker. Most of the time it's approximately 12 months. Okay. Appraisals. This is very important to most of you. And we've got a number of slides. Some of the slides that I'm going to have on here are actually quotes out of the Highlands Act, so you can see exactly where it comes from. This particular issue is something the Green Acres has always had. If the value of the property is estimated to be less than $250,000, we only require to go out for bid for one appraisal. If it's greater than $250,000, we are required to have two independent appraisals completed. These are appraisals that are done by independent entities, not employees of the state. We go out to the public. Anybody can hire these people. We bid out. We explain to them that we've got X number of acres, property, if there's some particular issues, maybe landlocked, maybe lots and lots of road frontage, the type of zoning. We explain to them what our issues are with this particular or what our the particular property is like. They bid on it, low bid. That's what we work on, and then they will go out and do the appraisal work. All of the appraisers that we do with have to be reviewed before a group of in-house appraisers that we have to make sure that they are, in fact, certified and know what they're doing. We aren't going out and getting somebody fly by night. These people have to be approved appraisers before we can use them. They're on our bid list. The Highlands Act is something that has caused a new issue for us. It's something that we've struggled with for a little while. We have to appraise the properties two ways. Not only do we have to get two appraisals, we have to appraise those properties two ways, and each appraiser has to do that. One is use the land use zoning of the laws and any state environmental laws or DEP rules and regulations that may affect the value of the lands in effect at the time of the proposed acquisition. In other words, now. What's here now? Okay? That's the market value. That's what the property is worth today. All right? The second is to use the land use zoning and any state environmental laws or DEP rules and regulations that may be in effect, that may affect the value of the lands in effect on January 1, 2004. This means a couple things. Number one, this was in the Highlands Act, okay? However, the Highlands Act started in August. Why do we go back to January 1? Because there were stormwater regulations that were put into effect prior to that, which may have an effect on value. C1 streams, some of you may have heard about that, talked about that. So we go back before that DEP regulation was put into effect also, so that we're able to come up with a value that was prior to the rules and regulations. And that's what we refer to in our office as a hypothetical value. What would it be if these rules weren't here today? We take these, and this is from the Act, all right? The higher of those two values will be utilized by the department, a local government, in other words, one of our partners that we might work with, or a qualifying tax-exempt nonprofit organization as the basis for negotiation with the landowner with respect to the acquisition price for the land. The landowner shall be provided with both values determined pursuant to this paragraph. A landowner may waive any of the requirements of this paragraph and may agree to sell the lands for less than the values determined pursuant to this paragraph. What does this mean? There's basis for negotiation. This is something everybody raises a question about for us. Everybody, and this is probably the question everybody wants to know about. Remember that Green Acres has been around for about 45 years, which is prior to the Highlands. Part of what we do is statewide, not just in the Highlands. And we have many different reasons that we buy land. We buy land as an addition to an existing park wildlife management area. We buy land for stormwater protection. We buy land to preserve aquifer recharge areas. We buy land to preserve natural endangered and threatened species habitat. There's a whole litany of reasons why we buy land. These reasons that we're looking at are the basis of negotiation. The value is one part of what we're looking at. We're looking at how is this going to benefit or protect or preserve part of what we're doing in the state of New Jersey. This value does a lot of things. Some cases we'll pay that value. Some cases we'll pay less. Occasionally we'll pay more. But this is the basis, and that's what the Act says. This is the basis of our negotiation, where we're starting at, something to start with. When the appraisers come out and you talk with them, because they're going to come out and they're going to want to know everything you know about your property so they can have an honest opinion of what they come with. As you know, appraisals are subjective. That's part of what we're looking at. Give them all of the information you can give. If it's about today, if it's about a proposal for a development that you had already started, which might affect our hypothetical value, let them know about that, because the more information that they have, the more information they'll be able to get back to us to give us a true look at what your property is all about. In addition, there are a couple of other regulations that we have to look at that are related to the Act. The owner at the time of the proposed acquisition is the same person who owned lands on August 10th, the date of the Act, 2004, or an immediate family member. Then we are allowed to use the hypothetical. If you purchase the land or the land changed ownership after August 10th, 2004, we only use the market value appraisal. So the benefit is to the property owners who have been the owners of their property prior to the Act, prior to the Highlands Act. This is what this was put in here for, to protect some of the equity of the owners. Just want to let you know who some of our people are. There's a handout that identifies this. This gives you an overview of the people. If some of you also own lands out of the Highlands, their names are also on here. Our representatives that are not in the Highlands are available to talk to you about other properties throughout. This handout that we have also has our phone number on it, and it also has all of our other information for contacting us on it. So with that said, just like to refer to the fact that you can get the additional information from our website. And we'll be happy to take questions afterwards, as Dante had had suggested before. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. That was very informative and helpful. So from those two presentations, you now have the two lead governmental entities who have funding for acquisition in the Highlands. What we want to turn to next is a discussion that we hope will be very helpful to you, which is, so if you want to go down the road of acquisition, there are a lot of factors that you need to think about, and one of them is the economic impacts, tax consequences, etc. And we're very pleased tonight to have an expert in that area, someone who's a distinguished attorney at the firm of Harold and Haynes, and that is Jim Wise. Jim's experience, he's experienced in a number of substantive areas, but in particular, one of them has to do with this very issue, which is conservation and tax benefits, financial aspects. So we're very pleased to have him here today. So, welcome.
Thank you.
Can someone turn on the air conditioner?
Sure.
Sorry about that. Good evening, everyone. Dante mentioned, I'm an attorney. I'm a local attorney. My practice has focused for many years on various aspects of land preservation, conservation, tax benefits that can go along with that in certain circumstances. I have experience representing both nonprofit organizations and landowners in this area.
A little louder, please. Talk into the mic.
I have represented a number of landowners with regard both to farmland preservation type projects as well as donations of conservation easements, sales of property for preservation purposes. I want to just comment very quickly on to follow up on the appraisal topic that Richard mentioned, and then I want to turn more to what happens if, you know, if in your particular case you're not participating in a an acquisition program where either SADC or Green Acres is buying your property, or perhaps they can only pay for a part of the value of the property, and you want to make a donation of some kind. Or if you have a family situation where you're concerned about estate taxes and the impact that federal estate taxes may have on your ability to keep your land in your family. On the appraisal issue, I've worked with a number of property owners who have, in particular in the farmland program, just a thought for you to consider if you're going into that program, and that is that if you've ever worked with appraisers, you know that in order for them to come up with an appropriate value, they have to make certain assumptions about what the development potential of your property is and the laws and regulations as applied. Now, it's not too difficult for them to figure out what the laws and regulations are. They can look at the zoning ordinances, they can look at DEP regulations. But when it comes to figuring out what the potential of your land was before the Highlands Act or what it is today, they need to have some information. And that information is often outside of their specific area of expertise. It's more in the area of the expertise of an engineer or other types of planning professionals. So what I have often recommended to people is to put together a team that consists of your own appraiser who can provide very valuable input into the various, you know, how different development scenarios that are possible on your property would affect its market value, and also an engineer who can develop with you at least a concept plan of what could be done with your property under the regulations in question, not a full-blown development proposal that you would submit to a planning board, but at least a plan that you can work from, and that this can provide a better basis for the appraisers to look and see what are we really appraising here. So that's just a tip I'll pass along that has proven to be very helpful to my clients in the past. Now, I want to talk just a bit about donations of conservation for conservation purposes and how that can affect you and your property and your family. This is a very, this is a topic I couldn't have spent hours talking about, so I can only give you a fairly brief overview, and I'll be around for a while afterwards if you want to ask me more specific questions. There are two main categories of tax benefit that can be gotten from donations of conservation interests. One is federal income tax and state income tax benefits, and the other is estate tax benefits. Now, for income tax purposes, a qualifying donation can entitle you to both an income tax break for federal purposes and also for state purposes. It's one of the few deductions that the New Jersey income tax allows. And that is measured by what you do is you evaluate through appraisal the value of what you're giving away. If you've donated a fee interest in a part of your property, it would be the value of that fee interest. And if you've donated a conservation easement, it would be the value of that conservation easement. If you have sold a conservation easement for less than its fair market value, and the easement qualifies, you can take a deduction for the difference between its fair market value and what you sold it for. It's not an all or nothing proposition. You're entitled to take that deduction against your income over a period total of 6 years, up to 30% of your adjusted gross income in each year until you use it up. So that can be a very valuable benefit, particularly if in a bargain sale situation, for example, you may have capital gain on the part that you sold. So the donation part can be used to offset that capital gain. The other broad area where tax benefits can be helpful to landowners who have property in their family that has appreciated a great deal in value. Perhaps your situation is that you want to keep it in your family after you pass away. You may have children who are interested in continuing to work the farm, or they just want to continue to live there, or you may have vacation properties that fit that same category. And a lot of people don't realize that we still have a federal estate tax. If you are required to pay that tax, it's a very hefty amount. And oftentimes, families who are land rich but aren't so rich in cash or other liquid types of assets find that in order to pay that estate tax, they have to in essence, sell the property, and that can be a rude surprise for their family later on when they realize that there's no other way around it but to put the property up for sale, and what they had hoped was to keep it. This is one of the reasons why a lot of people think about giving conservation easements on their property, even if there's no. If you're not able to participate in a program that will pay you for those rights, it can sometimes be a tremendous benefit just to make a donation of a conservation easement, because when you do that, one, you have the potential income tax benefits I mentioned, but two, it reduces the value of that land for estate tax purposes. So when you pass away and you've donated a conservation easement, now instead of your estate having to report the full value of that land is reporting a much lower value. So your family saves all of the tax that otherwise would have been paid on that value. And in addition, the federal government gives you some additional estate tax relief for donated easements in the form of a credit equal to 40% of the value of that conservation easement. This is on top of the reduction in value in your estate. It's just an extra incentive that the government gives you. There's no other logical reason, but they want to encourage it. So you can get up to 40% of the value of the restricted property as an additional write-off in your estate. As you can see, the combination of these things can end up reducing estate taxes very, very dramatically. And in many cases, can make the difference between a property being able to remain in the family or not remain in the family. In fact, there are a number of cases that I've been involved with where, you know, estate taxes have been reduced from more than $1 million to nothing as a result of those kinds of planning opportunities. Now, this is, it's not for everybody, but if you have property that you love, and you want to protect, and you're hoping to keep in your family, this is something you ought to at least consider. It requires that you do something about it, because what people often don't realize is that doing nothing can be very, very costly, particularly to your family after you're gone. Now, as a result of a change in the law several years ago, it is possible now to make those kinds of conservation easement donations even after you've passed away. Your heirs can do it, your executor can do it, for a limited period of time after you've passed away. So if you don't make these arrangements before you die, it is still possible to do it, although obviously you lose the income tax benefits that go along with it. As I said, one of the things that some people don't realize is that if you sell a conservation easement for less than its fair market value, that bargain sale portion is still entitled to be, you're still entitled to use that as a tax deduction in appropriate circumstances. I want to mention also just a few of the qualifications for this type of easement that I'm talking about. In order to qualify, it has to be a perpetual conservation easement. That means it lasts forever. Can't do this just for 30 years or 20 years. It has to be forever. The easement has to be given either to a governmental agency or to a qualified conservation organization. Most nonprofit land trusts, such as those who are presenting here tonight, would fit that category. It also has to serve a conservation purpose, and in this area, usually that purpose is going to be preservation of open space. That does not mean that you can't do anything on the property. Landowners are allowed to reserve certain limited rights. The standard is that you can't reserve a right if, in exercising that right, you would destroy the conservation values that the easement is trying to protect. But that still leaves room for, if the property is large enough, potentially, you know, an additional house site or two. These are fairly common kinds of rights that are reserved. The right to carry out agriculture is fine. Recreational types of activities are fine. Most people find that, you know, for the types of use that traditionally made of the land are not going to be affected. There are some things you have to be, be careful of. If you have a particular, for instance, suppose your property has an area around the stream that maybe has some special habitat features, you would have to have the easement drawn in such a way that it protected those areas. so that you couldn't, you know, build in such a way that you destroyed them. But these are usually fairly easy to deal with. Another thing to be aware of with conservation easements is that they require regular monitoring by the party who holds them. So you can expect that you'll get a visit once a year or so from whichever organization you donated this easement to. And the reason is simply that the law requires that they be periodically monitored to make sure that the easement is being observed. Another thing I wanted to mention, and I'm just about out of time, but another opportunity for those of you who are considering a sale of an easement is what's called a tax-free exchange. You've probably heard about this and think of it more in a commercial context, you know, where someone trades one property for another and you can avoid having to pay income taxes, capital gains taxes on that property because you made a swap. What some people don't realize is that is if you have property that's held for productive income or for investment, and a farm is typically property held for income production, you can do a tax-free exchange of an easement for a fee interest in another piece of property. So if you're worried about potential capital gains on the sale of development rights, one thing that you could look into is the possibility, and if you also were interested in continuing to invest in real estate, you could look into the possibility of doing a tax-free exchange of that easement for, say, a condominium somewhere that you might rent out to somebody if you wanted to avoid paying capital gains tax for now but and wanted to continue to invest in some other income-producing property. I'm going to leave it there for now because I can see we're running out of time. But I'll be around afterwards if you want to ask questions.
Thank you. Well, and whoever said that lawyers couldn't add helpfully to conversations, I think there are some terrific pearls of wisdom there and pieces of advice that will be very helpful. So now to recap, we've given you some information from the big funding sources. Some information on financial issues and tax consequences. The final piece that we want to give you in the end of our formal presentation before we let you ask your questions at the open house and talk to the folks directly is from Jeff Lajava. Jeff Lajava is one of our staff attorneys, as I said. He had a distinguished career in the private practice before joining us. Fortunately, he's experienced both in land use law and also has been our master on TDR. So on the latter subject, he's here to take it away and give you some information about what we're doing on TDR and to tell you how we see TDR addressing our preservation and land equity needs.
Thanks, Sante. Good evening, everyone. The farmland preservation and green acres programs that you heard about this evening are established programs. The TDR program is currently under development by the Highlands Council. The overview that I'm going to give you tonight is to basically highlight a few major issues. First, the council's mandate, the objectives and the goals of what we're trying to achieve with the TDR program, what the process is as we go through in developing this program, and what the major issues are that the council is currently looking at. I can guarantee you that as I go through this, I will raise more questions than I currently have answers for, again, because this program is in development. Many of you who attend the council meetings regularly will have seen parts of this presentation before. It is cribbed from a presentation that I gave to the Highlands Council on February 9th. So for those of you who have seen it before, I do apologize. For those who haven't, it's to just, again, provide some background information as to what we're trying to achieve with this program. First and most important, what is TDR? What is Transfer of Development Rights? Those development rights, as Susan pointed out earlier, are part of a bundle of rights that exist when you have the ownership of property. Those rights include air rights, timber rights, riparian rights, rights to use the property for agricultural purposes, those mineral rights and the like, and of course development rights to be able to build on your property. As a concept, what TDR tries to do, and if you look at the upper, the first line of the picture there, on the upper left-hand corner, that would be called the sending zone or sending area. That represents an area where the municipality, county, or a state program is trying to preserve that property, whether it be for agricultural purposes, to preserve farmland, for historic purposes. And again, I guess I should assume that there are no buildings on that property currently. Okay, so it should be undeveloped property. What TDR then tries to do is it tries to strip the development rights from that property, i.e. unused buildings, unused development rights, and transfer those to an area which is more appropriate to accommodate that growth. Those are called receiving areas. So that's the general concept. On the sending side, you're stripping or severing development rights, paying the landowner for that lost development potential, and then those rights get transferred to a receiving zone where the owner or person who purchases those development rights is then able to use those rights to build above base density. So if that person in the receiving zone could previously only build one home on 1 acre, using those development rights, let's say they can now build five, so they got an additional 4 units. That's the concept of TDR. So what is the mandate? The Highlands Council is to use the regional master plan as the basis for developing its TDR program. As you're all aware, the council is going through the process of developing that regional master plan currently. Relying on the natural resource assessment that's being performed, as well as the infrastructure capacity analysis and the integration of those, will help us identify where appropriate receiving areas will be, both within the planning area of the Highlands region and also within the 7 counties in which the Highlands region sits, but outside of the Highlands region itself. What are the program objectives? Both of these are equally important. The first is to serve as, I guess, the third leg in the stool of being able to preserve important properties. Again, whether that be for agricultural purposes, for open space and ecological resources, or historical purposes and the like. At the same time, the goal is to, or the objective is to ensure landowner equity for those that have been impacted by application of the Act and the regulations. From those two main objectives, there are 6 primary goals. To establish sustainable land use capacity consistent with the natural resource protection goals of the Act. To identify sending and receiving zones consistent with the regional master plan, as I spoke about previously. We need to provide a predictable process that provides a fair return on the use and utility of land in the sending zones. We need to develop a simple and understandable program and that addresses the concerns of the development market and affected landowners, such as those who are here. We also need to develop a program that balances the equity interest of landowners with the regional resource protection goals. Again, trying to go back to those 2 main objectives, which are equally important. And then finally, to develop sufficient incentive mechanisms to get broad-based stakeholder support to create the highest possible demand for credits, which in turn will maximize the return to those landowners that have been impacted by the Act. Those are the objectives, and those are the 6 goals. Now, unlike the Pinelands TDR program, which is called the Pinelands Development Credit Program, the Highlands Council does not have the authority to mandate where growth can go. So under the Highlands TDR provision, the Highlands Council can only recommend where those receiving zones will be. To incentivize municipalities to serve as voluntary receiving areas, the Act provides a number of incentives. The first is for a municipality that is going to serve as a receiving zone, that they're able to charge a $15,000 per unit impact fee across a development that is being built with TDR credits. The second is that the municipality is entitled to receive up to $250,000 in an enhanced planning grant to offset the cost of planning for development in that voluntary receiving area. The council also has the ability to provide grants to offset the costs of amending municipal development regulations and the local master plan to accommodate those receiving areas. Now, for municipalities that are within the Highlands planning area, but not those that are within the seven counties but outside of the region, those municipalities would be entitled to legal representation should a challenge be made based on the development and use of those voluntary receiving areas. Again, those municipalities would also be accorded infrastructure priority status for state various state programs. But again, keep in mind, for those communities outside of the Highlands region but within the seven counties, they are not entitled to those two incentives. And finally, municipalities, through their planning process, will have the ability to control the design of what that voluntary receiving area will look like, i.e. they will be able to implement the vision of the community for accepting that growth and then accommodating it to meet its needs. So what's the process that we're following currently as both staff, council, and then our consultants? Well, we've been identifying key TDR program goals and objectives, which I mentioned, including the identification of preliminary criteria for establishing sending zones and receiving zones, and those were adopted. Those criteria were adopted by the council on February 23rd. We've been utilizing stakeholder group meetings, which I know a number of you here have participated in. Those have been targeted meetings, generally limited to no more than 20 or 30 people, to get input from various stakeholder groups, such as those who are private property owners like yourselves, farmers, agricultural interests, the environmental community, of course, developers, municipalities. We're reviewing existing TDR programs across the country to figure out what elements have worked for those programs, what elements have made them a failure in certain cases. We need to learn from both of those experiences in developing this program. And finally, we're trying to detail the best program mechanisms for proposed valuation methodologies, i.e. how we can get the highest return for landowners on the development potential that is being severed from their property and being transferred to the receiving zones. Some of the programs that we're looking at includes the program, as I mentioned before, in the New Jersey Pinelands. We're looking at Chesterfield and Lumberton, those two programs in Burlington County. Many are aware of the Chesterfield program. Susan herself was very involved in development of that program. We're looking at the Long Island Pine Barrens out in Suffolk County, Long Island, as a regional TDR program like the one we're trying to establish here, as does the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency. And then a number of county programs have been set up that we're also investigating to, again, try to pull out what are those best mechanisms that will make this program successful. To date, we've met with a variety of different agencies and organizations, as well as individual property owners. This just provides a list of those whom we've met with thus far. We've gone through our initial phase stakeholder meetings. Those will be continuing. We've also met with our TDR Technical Advisory Committee. The Highlands Council just held a two-day charrette, a two-day large planning meeting with all of its technical advisory committees last week. We had great feedback from the TDR TAC, as we call it. Again, one of the main issues that came out is ensuring landowner equity, which is why we're trying to make this program successful. As I mentioned previously, the council on February 23rd identified or adopted both sending zone and receiving zone criteria. I'm not going to go through those right now, given the time constraints, but please be aware that this information is up on the Highlands Council's website. If you go to the link for the regional master plan, you will then see a link for TDR. So what are the key issues that the council is currently looking at, investigating, and analyzing? First, we're trying to determine which landowners can participate in the Highlands TDR program. That goes back to the sending zone criteria that I just talked about. We're evaluating criteria for determining what areas should be appropriate as receiving zones. Again, utilizing the information that we're developing through the regional master plan. We have to establish criteria for property prioritization for inclusion in the TDR program. Which properties should come in first and why? We're exploring techniques for allocation of Highlands development credits, or what those TDR credits will be, and how a property owner in a sending zone, how many credits they get, what's the basis for those credits being allocated to their property, and what those credits are going to entitle them to be able to do. We'll also have to assess the method for valuing what those credits will be. What's the either per credit value cost? Is that going to be based on lost development units? Is it going to be based on the actual value of that lost development potential? Is it going to be based on gross acreage, for example? There are a number of different ways to do that, and the council is exploring all of those currently. We're looking to establish a Highlands TDR bank. We are investigating and have been speaking with the staff of the state TDR bank to understand whether we can use that bank or we need to establish our own, which the council has the authority to do under the Highlands Act. And finally, we're investigating various methods for Highlands Development Credit acquisition. What this means is if a landowner might have an option, excuse me, a sending zone property owner would have an option to either receive a lump sum payment, possibly receive an annuity that would pay the value of that lost development potential over time, or to go through a land installment purchase contract so that we can extend the funds that will eventually be coming in for the program. So again, I just wanted to provide a quick overview and an update of where we are. We have received the first draft of our consultant's report. Integra Realty Resources has been working with the council very closely. Those of you who have participated in the stakeholder meetings have met Tony and Matt, who have been working with us. We are, again, going through that first phase of their report and working with them, and we're continuing to move forward in making this a successful program. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff. Okay, so we're now ready to let you talk one-on-one with the various experts who are here. Down the hallway are all of the nonprofits. There are going to be places around here for you to talk to folks, staff. If you check for the nameplates, can help direct you to whatever group you want to go to in terms of asking your questions. If you have questions for Debbie or for me, we'll be here. If you have questions for Susan or SADC over here, questions for Rich or Green Acres over here. And if you have any questions, grab someone from staff. So thank you for coming. If you have questions, please ask us.
Thank you.